If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Make sure to download Your Favorite Scary Story on my Apple Podcast and Spotify. Tales from the Dark Forest. A special shout out to the author. He has a YouTube channel if you care to check it out. Now, let's get spooky. One week ago, my wife and I moved into a gated community called Bravero. One of those cut-out paradises with aesthetics so vivid in photos, yet anemic in reality. After living there for 2 days, we moved to a hotel. It'll be our home for the foreseeable future. We just need to sell the property and find a new one. Anything, anywhere, far from Bravero. That's the only requirement. The nefarious nature of that place only became apparent once the street rules had been broken. No laughing after dark. "Honey," I called, chuckling. "What?" my wife replied from another room. "Get in here and see this," I said. Roanne strolled into the lobby with a beam on her face, still intoxicated by our new home. She rubbed a loving hand down my back, tracing the curvature of my spine. "What's got you smirking, Owen?" she asked. "This," I said, proudly displaying the leaflet that I'd found on the doormat. Roanne leaned forward and read it alongside me. "Dear Owen and Roanne, this is Irene from the Bravero HOA. Welcome to day one of your new life in this safe, vibrant community. You've already met Gordon, our resident security guard, so you know that safety is of the utmost importance to us. And the vibrancy of this community is apparent, but it extends beyond suburb landscaping and house-proud homeowners. It is the people who make this street vibrant. Parties and events, such as our regular garden gatherings and film nights, make this truly a place to call home. However, I do think it's prudent to inform you that one particular rule that, without exception, will be enforced. There must be no laughing after dark. This is not a matter of noise. We understand that all residents will want to watch TV, listen to music, or simply talk. Noise is an invaluable part of life. But laughter between sunset and sunrise is strictly prohibited in Bravero. What constitutes as after dark? There is no specific time at which laughter must cease. After all, the sun sets at about 4 o'clock in winter and nearly 10 o'clock after the height of summer. However, there is a window of murkiness between day and night. You might be wondering when to keep quiet. If you want my advice, Mr. and Mrs. Neville, I would suggest that you would not risk laughing once the day's light starts to fade. Once the sun starts to creep close to the horizon, for this is not a rule enforced in a black and white manner. It is not even a rule enforced by the HOA itself. Aside from that, there really is nothing to bear in mind. I do not run an oppressive association. You've already read and signed the contract. You know how we operate. Grow your hedges as tall as you wish. Paint your front door a garish color. Walk the streets after midnight if you so wish. Just do not laugh after dark. I told you I didn't want to live with rich people. They're unhinged, my wife said. No laughing after dark? What sort of nonsense is that? I hate moving. There's always something that the estate agent fails to mention. Some catch with every too-good-to-be-true property, I sighed. Sure, there was a broken dishwasher in the first place. The busted taps in the second place. The oven that fell loose in the third place. Issues that the agents and homeowners should have mentioned, Rowan said. But I thought we were all past all that, Owen. I thought buying a house at such a sickening price meant that we would be able to forego absurd problems. And this is worse than any of those issues in old houses because we won't be able to fix the problem. Of course we will. We shall become joyless husks, my dear wife. I sarcastically teased, maintaining a straight face as I embraced Rowan. For there is no laughter in Brave Row. This is a place of principles, of sincerity, I say. Go forth, my wench, and prepare me a sandwich in the kitchen. My wife offered a blank face. Actually, there's no need to worry. No chance of laughing with you around. I could tell by the looks on her lips that Rowan wanted the chorl. So I did, but in spite of our sarcastic responses to the letter, my wife and I were still drawn to the settling sun beyond the window, and I knew we were thinking the same thing. It would be moronic not to follow the rule for the first night, at least. I sensed that my wife felt just as uneasy as me, felt as if this was more than an HOA standard. Given how lax they seemed to be on other fronts, the one rule was unsettling. Why laughter? Why that sound above all others? The sound of joy itself. It was too late to do anything on our first evening. I decided I would discuss the letter with the HOA chief the following day. I rang as soon as I woke up. Owen Nivel, so wonderful to receive a call from you. Irene Hartley laughed the next morning. How was your first night in Brave Row? It was good, I uncertainly replied. Irene, I'm calling you about the welcome letter. Ah, I see. Did everything make sense? She asked warmly, yet obliviously. I frowned before realizing the woman obviously hadn't seen my face on the other end of the phone. Well, it was relatively straightforward. There wasn't much to digest, but one thing befuddled the two of us. The rule about laughter. Irene did not pause, and her bubbly tone did not falter. Yes, no laughing after dark, that's all. Did I explain how to interpret after dark? There is no exact cutoff point, no moment at which day becomes night. Do you understand? I sighed. It's not about that, Irene. It's about the nature of the rule itself. Does it not seem a little totalitarian to you? I'd understand the rule as such, no noise after 11 in the evening, but a rule about not laughing after dark is oddly specific, and it doesn't seem warranted. I don't see why laughing would even be worse than any other noises that neighbors could make. I paused, but Irene said nothing, so I continued. Plus, as you mentioned in the letter, the sun sets early in winter. Are you seriously suggesting that on Christmas Day, to give an example, Rowan and I won't be able to have a joyous time with our family after, say, 3 or 4 in the afternoon? Not at all, Mr. Nivel. Be as joyous as you want throughout the year, Irene said. I'm only saying that you wouldn't be able to laugh after dark. Not until the sun rises once more. I grumbled in frustration. I have to say I'm more than frustrated to be learning of this rule after finalizing the contract. Did you not talk to the leading agent at Brave Rose HOA before purchasing the property, Mr. Nivel? Irene asked. Yes, I spat. I signed your association's agreement, and there was no mention of this rule in there. I know because I read it again this morning, so this isn't legally enforceable. You're absolutely right, Mr. Nivel. It isn't legally enforceable, Irene replied. I huffed anxiously. Right, so. Did I mention anything about a possible breach of our contract? Irene interrupted. Did I mention anything about the consequences of breaking the rule? Did I mention, for example, anything about seizing the property? Should you not comply? Well, no, I said. But what's the point of making a rule that you won't be able to enforce? As I mentioned in the letter, Mr. Neville, I'm not the one who enforced it, Irene replied. The HOA didn't make the rule. We simply inform. I see, I muttered through clenched teeth, tiring of the irritating, cheerish busybody. So, what would the consequences be of my wife or I deciding to laugh after dark? For the first time in our entire conversation, Irene fell silent. Hesitated for a moment. Longer than a moment, in fact. It was her only sign of humanity throughout the call. The only sign that she was more than a pre-programmed series of chipper, dismissive statements. This is an amazing neighborhood, Mr. Neville, Irene solemnly said. The 50 residents of Brave Row lead happy lives, and I hope you could join them. I truly do. But we have all had to sacrifice something for such peace. Such security from the outside world. And that something is laughter, Mr. Neville. But only during these dark hours of the day. That's not an answer, Irene, I said. What would be the consequences? I wish you would have known the few poor souls who received an answer. Irene replied coldly. If you had, you wouldn't be asking the questions. You'd not dare to laugh ever again. The curt woman, whose joyous demeanor had entirely dissipated, abruptly ended the call, and I was left sitting in my study for the rest of the day, ignoring messages from my boss and coworkers, not only refusing to work, but refusing to move. That may seem a little extreme, but you would understand my reaction if you had overheard that call. If you lived on the street of Brave Row for a mere 2 days, as my wife and I did. Because we certainly didn't stay after what had happened on the second night. I was stirring in my trance, which must have lasted hours at around 9 in the evening. Roanne had finally returned home from another late night at the hospital. And the slam in the front door seemed to finally bolt my frozen body from its paralysis. Still, the sudden return to reality did not make me feel any better about the call with Irene. I didn't dismiss the rule as an overbearing control of a tyrannical association. No, I believed the old woman. I believed that something awful would happen if we were to laugh. I had no idea what that something might be, but I'm no fool. I wasn't going to wait for an answer. I didn't want an answer. I wanted my wife and I to sell our home. I wanted to buy a hotel for the night and figure everything else out after that. Owen? Roanne called. I shakily stumbled out of the office, wondering what had possessed me. Wondering why my heart was beating so quickly. Irene's just a power-hungry socialite, I told myself. You should hire a lawyer. Talk about this stupid rule that wasn't included in the agreement. That was what the rational part of my brain said. However, the irrational part of my brain, the part steering by my sick gut, told me to ignore logic, ignore reason, and listen to that ever-present dread in my heart. The dread that told me listen to Irene. The dread that told me to take my wife away from Brave Row. By the time I reached the lobby, I was painting. Sweetie, I... My eyes widened when I saw that Roanne wasn't alone. Her colleague Joanne was standing beside her. My wife's friend wore a smile on her face. Sorry, it's been a wild day, Roanne sighed, walking over to me and planting a kiss on my cheek. I'm just going to lend Jo one of my dresses. She's got a fun night out planned out for tomorrow. I'll be out of your hair in a jiffy, Owen, Joanne promised. I followed my wife upstairs and started whispering. Honey, I said, I talked to Irene. Something is very wrong with this place. What do you mean? My wife replied as we reached the upstairs landing. Did you tell her that the HOA didn't mention the noise rule in the agreement we signed? Yes, I said. She admitted that it wasn't an official rule, nothing that could be legally enforced. Good, Rohan smiled. Case closed, sweetheart. No, I shook my head. It isn't closed. She told me that the rule is enforced by, well, she didn't say who enforced it. She just said some really disturbing things, Rohan. She said others had learned the consequence the hard way. She was giving me a warning or a threat. My wife frowned. Should we find an attorney? This isn't right. The bullying tactic. It must breach our contract or some law. We could fix all of that later, I said. Right now, I want to get out of here. What? Rohan asked. Sweetie, we just moved into this place. And I'm telling you to trust me, sweetie, I begged, still breathing heavily. Do you? Well, of course, Owen, but you're starting to make me anxious. My wife shivered. What did Irene say to you? Just, it was her voice, Rohan. The way she mentioned the consequences. It wasn't right, any of it. I think we should get out of here, I pleaded. I expected my wife to resist. I expected her to roll her eyes and say that life doesn't work that way. We had just bought the house. To sell it immediately based on our unnerving phone call might seem a little extreme to some people. And if there were any other reason for my distrust, then I would absolutely agree. I'd argue that we should stand our ground, hire an attorney, laugh for hours in the comfort of our own home, simply despite the maniacs in charge. But I believed that woman, and Rohan clearly believed me. Okay, my wife nodded. I'll fetch that dress for Joanne, then we'll go to the hotel. But tomorrow we have to sort everything. I smiled tearfully. Thank you, honey. Thanks.
What are you two doing up there? Didn't stumble in the bed on your way to the wardrobe, did you?
Joanne laughed loudly from downstairs. Ouch, my wife yelped. My fingers had involuntarily tightened like talons around Roanne's upper arms, but I immediately released her when I regained control. And then my eyes shot to the bedroom window, eyeing the darkness which painted the horizon. A sliver of sunlight persisted on that humid summer's evening, a glow at the end of the blackened tunnel. I prayed for the first time in my atheistic life. Prayed that she had laughed before dark.
Owen?
Rohan whispered, lip trembling.
Would you call it dark outside?
I croaked. My wife's head rolled slowly to the window. Then she returned her frightful eyes to me.
It'll be fine, honey. I'm sure it'll be fine.
Joanne didn't know about the rule. We'd receive a slap on the wrist or something. Like you had told me this morning, there was nothing about laughing in the contract. By the haunting look in Roanne's eyes, it was clear that she, like me, felt something. A foreboding ripple in the air, which felt and smelt like rotten breath. I felt it a day earlier, when we unloaded our belongings from the moving van. The sense that something hid within Brave Row, a watcher.
Hello?
Joanne called again, chuckling.
Won't she stop?
I mumbled, clutching clumps of my hair.
Come on,
Rohan whimpered, clumsily plucking a blue gingham dress from the rack.
She'll take this leave and then we'll leave too, okay?
I nodded, stepping in front of my wife and taking the dress from her. Then we walked across the landing like wary prisoners on death row. I tentatively peered over the banister at Joanne, the smiling woman donning turquoise scrubs that matched those of my wife. I was frustrated and terrified in equal measure by the innocence of Roanne's friend, the ignorance. The problem wasn't simply that Joe hadn't read the letter. It was that she clearly didn't feel what Rohan and I felt. Though my wife and I had been jubilant on the first day in our new home, our property had been pre-furnished with a weightly blanket of darkness.
something I'd read in Roanne's eyes, and I'm sure she must have read it in mine. You took your time, Joanne giggled, piercing my heart with fright for the third time. It made me laugh seeing you run upstairs after her. Did Roanne need your fashion tips, Owen? Something like that, I whispered, hurriedly handing the dress to my wife's friend. Are you okay back there, Roanne? Joanne smiled, peering at my wife, who timidly stepped out from behind me. Come over shy all of a sudden? Now I'm starting to think you coy lovers really did get up to something. To be young again. Anyways, thank you very much, sweetheart. You're an absolute lifesaver. In this dress, I'm sure to catch the eye of... Joanne was interrupted. Not by knocking on the door. Not by a disappearance of lights in the house. Not by any ominous sign I expected. She was interrupted by spontaneous choking, prompted by nothing that made sense. Joanne? Roanne gasped, rushing forward. My wife managed to catch her frightened friend in outstretched arms. Tears swam in Joanne's eyes as her legs buckled and she gasped for air. Then Roanne started to perform the Heimlich maneuver as snot spilled from Joanne's nostrils, and I contended with the terror of witnessing somebody die. Several excruciating seconds later, with the slight crunch of Joanne's ribcage splintering, a vile stream of bile released from the back of her throat. And in the mess, while spread with a festering pool on the floor, there floated a crumpled piece of paper. Being the only non-squimished member of the trio, and noting that the other were two still recovering from the trauma of Joanne's sudden hit, I knelt down to pick up the note from the lake of vomit. It bore neat printed lines of text in a minute font. After I scraped a streak of sick away, two sentences became legible. Expulsion notice. Please exit through the basement. I read the note aloud, while Joanne continued the sputter, and my wife eyed me with confusion. So I read the note again, and again. Joanne looked twice as perplexed as Roanne. I understood, of course. Understood that none of it seemed rational. We did not have an explanation for the note's mysterious arrival. Joanne hadn't swallowed the slip of paper. It had simply emerged at the top of her throat, corking her trachea. Not in an attempt to end her life, clearly, given the note's second sentence. Please exit through the basement. Joanne screamed as she flung the front door open. It revealed not the front porch, but the kitchen. And the back door of the house opened onto the front entryway. Windows opened onto the interiors of various other rooms throughout the house. This was the case for not only Joanne, but for Roanne and me too. We were all doomed to the same fate, trapped in a looping maze, and the horror of our predicament was unavoidable. We had one option. What happens if we listen to it, if we exit through the basement? My wife whispered. What is happening? Joanne wailed, barely registering anything. I shakily answered. You laughed, Joanne. I don't know why, but it's wrong. What are you saying? The woman shrieked tearfully, snot still staining her face. How did that appear in my throat? We don't understand it either, Roanne whispered, holding her friend's hand while turning to me. But we have to try to the basement. It's the only room we avoided. I gulped, nodding, and Joanne sobbed while I led the two of them to the door. It opened with a slight creak, and I should have breathed a sigh of relief at seeing the basement's darkened staircase rather than a portal to another room in the house. But there was no wave of euphoria, only that blackened tide of fear rolling towards my mind, threatening something worse than an end. I was haunted by the idea that death might be a kinder fate than whatever laid below. I guided us into the darkness, taking fragile steps and spinning my head frequently to ensure that Roanne and Joanne remained behind me. Once we reached the lightness of the basement floor, the door at the top of the staircase loudly closed,
and I fumbled for the light switch, but it was gone. There seemed to be nothing down there. None of our unpacked boxes, no shelving units, nothing. Just an empty, unlit room. A black expanse.
What now?
Joanne timidly asked. I have no idea, I replied.
We should look for an exit, Roanne said.
This is the exit, I pointed out. That's what the note said.
No, Joanne said.
My wife agreed. Joe's right. There must be more to it than this. There.
No,
Joanne repeated, interrupting her more forcefully.
Joe, are you okay?
Roanne asked, shuffling around and grabbing my arm.
Is that you?
No, it's me, I said, taking my wife's hand. I thought you were holding on to Joanne.
No, I... Joe, where are you?
She said fearfully.
No, no, no.
Joanne sobbed, her voice and presence seeming to grow more distant. And then came laughter. Not a kind laugh. Not a laugh of joy. Not even a mocking one. It was a laugh devoid of soul, devoid of life. One that seemed to serve simply as the welcome to some eternal nightmare. One that Joanne seemed to be blindly walking towards, willfully or not. I clutched the air or a void with my free hand, desperate to find her. But she was gone.
Stop it!
Joe cried, sounding far too distant for such a compact basement.
Why are you laughing? Show yourself! Who's there? Who are... Oh, God, no! What are you? What are you?
My wife's friend screamed as she saw something in the dark. Something that Roanne and I did not see. Something I know was too terrible for living eyes, as Joanne had perished. I'm not sure how I understood that, but she would not be returning to the land of the living. I understood that she was not simply exiting Bravero. She was exiting reality. And she would not be entering some joyous afterlife. I had no doubt that a hellish, torturous eternity awaited. Squeaking wood sounded, and I rotated my head. Roanne and I had only walked a few steps from the staircase, but it was inexplicably 100 yards behind us. The door opened, and at the top of the stairs cast light from the lobby. It was the only visible thing in the void which had swallowed Joanne. The void that still threatened to swallow Roanne and me.
Come on, I yelled, dragging my wife behind me.
As we darted towards the escape, I started to feel something more physical in the absence of the room. A manifestation of the dark tide that had been approaching my mind. Joanne whimpered incoherently from a place both neither near nor distant.
It's... Owen!
Roanne cried as we approached the stairs.
We have to...
Go, I ordered, pushing my wife onto the first step.
Please, Owen, she begged. There must be something, some way to save her.
I turned for a moment and immediately felt a searing pain in my brain. That black tide had finally arrived, washing away all the joy in my soul. Bringing not suffering, but the promise of suffering. It was a warning from somewhere in the lay of the deepness of the basement. Whatever thing outside of the HOA enforced the rule. Roanne and I had obeyed that rule. Joanne had not. My wife and I were being offered safe passage from the terror. We were on the stairs, mere yards away from safety. But I considered it for a moment. Considered what my wife had said. There had to be a way of saving Joanne. In a place that defied all spatial laws, I still felt that presence of Roanne's friend. Felt her cries burrowing deeply into my ears, as distant as they sounded. I realized that the place was a trick. She might only be yards from us. I could do something. But the watcher read my thoughts, read my intent to plunge into the darkness and rescue the poor woman. That likely would have broken some other unspoken rule for a hand stretched out from the black. and it did not belong to Joanne. It was a skeletal six-fingered appendage, cloaked in ragged ripped strips of gray skin. It was not skin at all, of course. Just as the hand was not a hand. It was not anything that belonged to anyone. Worst of all, I knew it did not even belong to the Watcher. The hand was a tool used to make its point. If I had seen even a sliver of that thing's true form, I would have been broken like Joanne. Whatever enforced the rule of joyless evenings in Bravero, and it did not share Joanne anywhere earthly. I screamed, backing away from the fingers as they sought to snatch me. Perhaps by returning to the dark and searching for Joanne, I would have faced the same horrible doom. But I did not allow myself to find out. I narrowly swerved the fingers and followed Roanne clumsily up the stairs before slamming the door behind us. The two of us ran to the front entrance, and Roanne pushed down the handle to reveal a wonderful sight. Our porch. Our driveway, more importantly. We did not stop the pack. Did not stop to think. We bundled into the car, drove away from Bravero, and promised never to look back. A few days have passed, and we've decided not to return to collect our things. Even as the sun's high point of the day, I wouldn't risk uttering even the slightest giggle in Bravero. Besides, there are things worse than material loss. Things worse than death, even. But I never gazed at those things, and I pray I never will. I pray for something truly awful in truth. I wish that Joanne had died before seeing whatever she saw.